In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit Hard Rock.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for a Coolest Conversations throwback, presented by Hard Rock, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My interview with Debbie Harry of Blondie first aired on Friday, May the 5th, 2017. And in it, we talk about her love of literature and poetry and how that's influenced her songwriting. We also speak about her parents, how they dealt with her being in a rock band, as well as how she feels about being a role model and how female artists in the industry are handled. Also, we chat about her friendship with our very own Palmyra Delran. And of course, we speak of Blondie's new album at the time, Pollinator, which featured our then coolest song in the world, My Monster. So let's hear some of that now, followed by our Coolest Conversations throwback, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Human beings are stupid things when we're young. Scared stiff straight, all woos and shakes, hard on.
Big day for our Coolest Conversations, because joining me is Debbie Harry from Blondie. Hi, Debbie. How are you?
Hi. I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, pretty great. Pretty great. You know, we just took a listen to My Monster. It's our coolest song in the world this week off your new album that's out today called Pollinator, a song written by Johnny Marr of the Smiths. And so you and Chris Stein have got two songs on the new album, the balance, though, written by other artists or collaborations with other artists. Why did you guys decide to reach out to other folks and go that route for the new album?
Well, it just was something that evolved and something that happened. You know, we were putting our heads together, you know, and coming up with some material. We had, you know, started working with BMG, and they have, you know, a lot of different artists, you know, that work with them. So they started sending us some songs. I guess the My Monster was one of those songs. And, you know, we love Johnny Marr. He said that, you know, he had written the song for us. And it was, I think it was the first song that, you know, Chris heard. And, you know, he was very excited about it. So, you know, it just seemed like a no-brainer, and so we just went on from there. Coincidentally, I don't know, maybe a couple years ago, we met up with Blood Orange and Jeff Hines out on the road somewhere and at a festival, and later on, he asked me if I would sing on a couple of his demos, and Long Time was one of the demos. So when we started, you know, listening to stuff that we had, and, you know, that song came up, and we just said, you know, what are you doing with the song? You know, are you going to release it? What's the deal? And he said, you know, we could record it with Blondie. So we did that. We re-recorded it and, you know, put it together as a Blondie song.
Oh, very cool. You know, about the Johnny Marr song, I was reading about that, and he said it was such a big deal for him, specifically because he normally doesn't write any lyrics, and it was such a challenge for him to make it worthy, he said, because he loves your songwriting and your song lyrics. Is there any line of that song out of My Monster that sticks in your head that you like especially?
Well, I think that the punchline, you know, oh my God, there goes my monster, you know, speaks volumes. We met Johnny at the Q Awards in London. You know, he was saying, he said exactly that, you know, that he doesn't usually write lyrics. And you know, he said he was really challenged to do it. But I seems like he can do a pretty good job doing it. So
yeah, I think
maybe
so.
He can do more of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, your own songwriting, your lyrics, I think, are just terrific. My favorite couplet there is the opening line of Dreaming. When I met you in the restaurant, you could tell I was no debutante. Before you started off your singing career, did you ever think of yourself as an aspiring writer or poet?
Well, I always liked it, and I was always like sort of a scribbler. I was never very trained to do it. It's not like I went to school and was encouraged to become a writer, but I read a lot, and even as a kid, I read a lot. So I think I've always been fascinated by literature, by poetry. So in a way, I guess it sort of was a dormant state.
Well, were your parents supportive of these artistic endeavors, aspiring singer and so forth?
I can't really say that they were one or the other, you know, supportive mm-hmm. or not supportive. I think that they felt it was a world that was completely foreign to them, and yeah. they just want to not, you know, I think they wanted to protect me from failure or from any kind of harm. You know, I think they were very parental and sort of old-fashioned in a lot of ways. As an adult, as a mature person, I look at, you know, their caution as being, you know, a good parenting from their point of view. I don't think that they would have ever encouraged me to be in a rock band, truthfully.
Did they come to terms with that eventually?
I guess so. they're both gone now, you know. But I think that, you know, when I started having... you know, success, and there was press and everything like that, that they were very, I think they were very excited and proud. Yeah.
So the opening track to the new album, The Pollinator, is Doom and Destiny. That's got Joan Jett on it. And later on the album, you got a track that's got Laurie Anderson contributing, Tonight. Both of them are iconic performers in their own rights, right? Role models in a way, too. Do you think things are easier now for women artists, or are the hurdles more subtle but just as difficult?
You know, I guess, you know, from my position, from my experience, mm-hmm. and from my personality, I've always appreciated being the underdog.
Yeah.
Because it sort of makes you be smarter and work harder, and to have a sort of a more sympathetic point of view. But, you know, it's different for everybody. I think it has become that there obviously are a lot more opportunities for women, for girls. It seems to be more of a natural succession than it ever has been. But, I mean, it seems like, except for, you know, possibly some African and some Middle Eastern countries, you know, the way of the world at this point.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about this, like, people looking at you as a role model? How do you feel about that or address that?
I have made countless mistakes in my life. But I've also made countless good decisions. I guess, you know, people look at, what I've done and think that I'm a role model, and perhaps in that respect, it's good, you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think, as Joey Brown said at the end of Some Like It Hot, nobody's perfect.
So a couple of tracks on Pollinator feature help from either, let's see, Gregory Brothers or John Roberts. How important is, like, humor in pop songwriting for you?
Well, I sort of like things that have a double meaning and yeah. sort of, you know, can be a little bit cutting. And I do like a certain amount of humor. But I think mostly I sort of like a double entendre is, like, really kind of playful for me. I don't know if there's ever really explicit humor. I think that the humor that comes from the Gregory Brothers is equally as visual as it is lyrical or musical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like nothing in rock is quite musical comedy, although I suppose, you know, Meatloaf in sort of close to that.
Well, speaking of, like, fun music, when you're, like, you're home alone, what's your go-to thing to put on and dance around in the apartment, or to dance around at home with?
Honestly, in the house, I don't put music on. I usually like to listen to, actually, I listen to you guys in the car.
Oh, thanks.
And I like the idea of being in my little sound booth. That's pretty much it.
our very own Palmyra Del Ran, you know, she's on the air Sunday mornings. You guys are good friends, right?
Yeah.
And how did you guys meet?
Well, I met her through a friend of hers, Linda Carbone, and Rob Roth actually introduced me to both of them. And he's an old friend of mine from the Jackie 60 days back in Clubland. You know how New York is just a small world. Actually, yeah. New York and L.A. are both small worlds. And they've become more closely linked over the years. You know, and the fact that Palmyra's been banned and had a band for all these years, I've been totally, you know, aware of who she is and you know, what she does.
Talking about, you know, live music, so you guys are starting out, Blondie's part of this burgeoning New York music scene going on in the towards the mid to late 70s. Was there any act back then that you thought for certain would be big, but it never really happened? Like somebody that deserved to much wider recognition, but it never came to be?
Well, I always really loved Suicide, so I thought that they were really adventurous musically, and terrific. Al was a great performer, and they were way ahead of their time. They lasted, you know, I mean, the music stood up and lasted, went through time, but it never really became commercial, very super commercial. It was very, you know, more cult thing, but I think that they clearly led the way for a lot of other, you know, duos and electronica.
Well, this summer you're touring with Garbage. It's called the Rage and Rapture Tour. It kicks off July the 5th outside of San Jose. Have you ever played with them before or hung out with them at all?
Well, yeah. I've sort of known Charlie through the years. I met her when she was singing with Goodbye, Mr. McKenzie. Gee, I guess it might have even been in the 70s when I met her, maybe the 80s. You know, I was really impressed, you know, she's such a talent. I think it was somewhere in Scotland. I think it might have been in Glasgow, actually. You know, from then, years later, we were both managed by Gary Kerfoot, and Gary at the time was managing the Ramones, Talking Heads, Big Audio Dynamite, me, Shirley, and I'm sure there's some other artists that he was managing, but it was a really nice roster of names to be associated with. And at that point, you know, Shirley was trying to find a name for her band. And in some odd way, I may have actually helped name her band Garbage.
And how was that?
Well, I know she was calling herself the Angelfish at the time. And I was in the office with Gary shooting the breeze. And I don't know, something came up about, you know, the Stilettos and how, you know, I had that band, the Stilettos, or the group, the Stilettos. And I said that, you know, I had run into Elga, who was working at the time with Holly Woodlawn, and they had a group and they called it Pure Garbage. And so when I said Pure Garbage, Gary's face, I mean, he lit up. And so then I think that that's how Garbage became Garbage. But I could be wrong. You know, I can't swear by this, but I know that Gary liked that idea.
Well, I'm going with it. That is a very good origin story. So I'm saying that's great. So when you do these tours, I mean, is a tour like this, is it something to endure, or do you really love performing?
You know, both, because it's hard work, physical. You know, you're moving around a lot. A lot of times it's, you know, do a show, get the bus, travel. You know, which is physically hard. You know, you have to really be, I don't know, cut out for it, or you sort of adapt, or, you know, get used to doing it, you adapt. But that's what we do it for, because, you know, the audiences are there, they want to hear the music, you get to play. It's kind of crazy, you know, to be so focused, but I don't know, I feel privileged.
Well, I'd like us to take a listen to another track off the new album, the song Long Time. You alluding to it earlier, talking about it earlier. It's written by you and Dev Hynes of Blood Orange fame. So in case folks in the Underground Garage aren't familiar with him, how do you describe him, Dev Hynes?
Ah, yes. Well, he's a He's a multi-talented instrumentalist. He plays the keyboard, guitar, and cello, and probably some other instruments that I don't know about, but he's a very talented guy. He's a terrific dancer. He's gorgeous. And he likes good words. You know, he's a good lyricist. I think that he's a great talent. You know, I think he's going to be around for a while. He does some very avant-garde things as well, which is always very interesting, you know, from a rock musician. To have, you know, somebody do something that's not quite what you'd expect from a rock musician. It's very fascinating for me.
So now the writing credit, as I see it, lists him as well as yourself. So you contributed lyrics or some lyrics or did he come up with the melody? How did that collaboration work between you two?
Oh, well, it's totally his song. It's not a collaboration in any respect other than the fact that he asked me to sing on his demo, and I was thrilled and excited that he had asked me, and I went into the studio over there on, I think it was like 18th Street in Manhattan. We recorded actually two tracks. One of them is called Magic, and the other one was Long Time. So these are songs that he had pretty much written, and I may have supplied a few lines here and there, but they're really his songs. I'm not a co-writer on anything.
Well, Debbie Darn, I'm going to have to wrap things up. I just want to thank you so much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Well, you're talking to the right person for Coolest.
Yeah. Well, as promised, we need to take a listen to Long Time off the brand new album out today, Pollinator. It's Blondie and Little Stevens, Underground Garage.
Running circles round a night that never ends. I've been chasing heartache in a city and a friend. I've been with you so long, even seen you lose it, but who cares? Racing down the Bowery on a crowded afternoon, dripping from the downpour of your insecure typhoon. Can you even want me, or is this just the way to keep you sane?
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.